topic in regard to marriage, at least now. We are attempting to give you some picture as to how different people in the various disciplines work together in the area of helping people. Now, I want to give you the right mental set for our presentation and tell you that perhaps this might not make a great deal of sense to you at this particular moment, but that I'm quite sure that you'll be able to draw on things that are said here tonight, next year and the year thereafter and the years to come when you are confronted with particular problems and in working with parishioners, and will then know how to call in the right people to assist you. I think it is well of interdisciplinary communications, it's quite generally understood that the person who functions well in his discipline knows when and how to work with other disciplines. Now, tonight we have certainly the clergy represented, social work represented, and also that of medicine. Now, I mentioned to the group earlier as we were having dinner that certainly you need to keep in mind many other people who also function within their discipline in the helping and healing partnership. And certainly this would include nurses, both hospital and public health nurses, lawyers, politicians, and certainly a very important group would be that of teachers. I hope that I can give you some particular ideas to what area falls specifically sort of in my category. I'm a physician with a specialty in psychiatry, and those of you pastors and those of you who are wives may have to remind your husbands of some of the points tonight, and that is our area deals more specifically designed to deal with the major emotional disorders. And this is primarily in the area of the psychotic depressions, schizophrenia, which is one of the major mental disorders, and the various organic disturbances of the body in which there can be disturbances in emotional behavior. So this is almost completely in the domain of medicine and of my particular specialty. Now, I spend about 80% of my time working with people who are not in that particular category, and then I think working in many ways very much with the same techniques as all of the other disciplines. And my feeling is the extent to which you can be, if you can be of help in a partnership and working with someone, depends certainly on your training, but also on your own particular interests and personality. I think the most dangerous thing, again, is to feel that you can do nothing, and therefore you must call in someone else to do the work, or on the other hand, to fall into the category of feeling that you can do it all by yourself.
What time do you start talking about this in the world? That we're trying to give him a little bit more time to catch his breath. As a representative of the profession of social work and representing a family counseling agency here in the community, both in family and children's services, I speak from that particular perspective. We're calling the little phrase in our agency that we see ourselves as an extension of pastoral and congregational care and concern. So we see ourselves as working closely with the parish pastors from whom most of the referrals come and whom we work. We work with people with problems primarily. People who are having problems of a marital nature, marital conflict, unsatisfactory parent-child relationships, problems dealing with adolescents, the entrance of children into school, problems with children having difficulty learning in school, emotional basis for this particular problem. We work with parents who are unmarried, work with families who are in a state of crisis needing emergency care relationship and communication in a family. Examples of a maturational crisis would be the entrance into adolescence of a toddler young person, menopause, going through menopause and part of an individual and marital relationship, or senescence, old age, would be an example of a maturational crisis. And when individuals come to us with a problem, usually they are operating under considerable anxiety in some state of crisis. We hope to work with the individual, sometimes as an individual, sometimes as a couple, sometimes as an entire family, as seems the latest modes of treatment, our family therapy, to work with them to get a better level of functioning going, or to restore a previous level of functioning that was upset before the particular problem or crisis developed. So this is how you would use a social agency in terms of your ministry. However, social work is seeing more and more that too often, likewise in psychiatry also, too often we have been on the scene to pick up pieces after the accident has occurred. And we see that more and more we must go into work of a preventive nature, so that social work agencies throughout the country are rethinking their role in terms of how can they be on the scene to keep a family from going apart. How can they be of help to individuals before some of these crises develop, which get people into social agencies, into counseling centers, wherever they may be located. And part of this effort or this thrust in preventive social work is that of family life education, helping groups of individuals understand what some of these crises are that all people have to go through. For example, helping parents to understand what is adolescence in terms of the social, the physical, the psychological aspects of adolescence. What does old age mean to a person? What are some of the problems that are brought along with this particular maturational crisis? So we're hoping more and more to be on the scene before some of these accidents, so to say, occur, and also to work closely with fellows like you who bring into the ministry, pastors, teachers, for early diagnosis and early treatment before pathology becomes very deep. We do not see ourselves as all things to all people. And in many instances, pastors perhaps refer inappropriately because they think that we have some kind of magical bag of tricks under our desk that they don't have. And I have to say to them that this is not true. And in many instances, we could perhaps work in a better capacity as a consultant to them if they were to work with the family, because they have the relationship with the family, which is one of the means whereby treatment or counseling occurs, and also they're on the scene when the family needs help, and most likely the family will come to the pastor first. And we could be of help to the pastor if he wishes to continue working with the family and giving him some guidance and understanding of what is occurring in the family, and if things get too deep, we do stand by to help or to refer to a more appropriate resource. Also, they make great use of the expertise of other professions in the community, psychiatry, medicine, law, psychology, public welfare. We cannot be all things to all people as a counseling center, but together in a team, in a healing team, so to say, can we best be of help to the individual and to the community.
As usual, I'm the only one who came unprepared since I just got here, and we're all prepared. But I like to think of myself, let me deviate from what they told me to say here for a moment, as a parish pastor who carries the brunt of the burden of these so-called crises which were mentioned. Now, I function as an internist, and it is my occupation to daily deal with people who are dying. By this I'm speaking about literally organically dying. So crisis is very routine in my life, and I have much more problem in his area where speaking about psychiatry. As long as everything is going badly, I'm relaxed. It's when we get into his area that I become unstrung. But actually, I think as a physician, if I may take the role of physician here, all the panel is very nicely put together. And I would like to mention to you that in the same would apply to the parish pastor. I think Pastor Ross will agree with me when he gets up there also. That he too has the same thankfulness that we have these other areas to help us out. And I'm sure that the day never passes when I'm not thankful is there are such people as psychiatrists. They are very great benefit to the practicing physician, and I hopefully are a great benefit to the parish pastor also. But I will not at all discuss why this is. I will let him answer that later. But these are both most valuable people. But the rest of the panel equally is very valuable. I don't want to skip over the parish pastor, but the day really never passes that I'm sure I don't see two or three of these men or involved with a member of their own congregation who is really quite seriously ill. This is not a casual visit, it's a rather significant one. And we have a close line of communication, and I would encourage you in your future work to always feel you should have a close line of communication with the physician who is treating your particular individual as an interest. And to heap a little praise on the man in the middle there, what I will call the chaplain, I don't think personally having been involved in the chaplaincy a long time may have made me prejudiced, but honestly, these men are an invaluable aid within the walls of the hospital. And if you were to work in a hospital continually, as say I do, or other physicians or nurses and so on do, I think we would all agree that this man is an invaluable aid and should be used. Now, we as physicians, I don't think have any problem with this, but I think sometimes parish pastors may have problems with it. But not stepping on somebody's but this is a very valuable individual to use in your future work, and I must say this very strongly because when I'm personally involved in the hospital, I have always made use of these men, and I'm very thankful to have them around. Now, particularly in my area, where frequently we are dealing with someone who is critically ill, the assistance this man gives me is very great, I assure you. And very often he can do the thousand things that I just cannot take time to, and more important, do even better than I can, as far as speaking to the family and the thousand things that goes on with a terrible situation like this. And that, last but not least, what has finally come into prominence, even within the walls of the hospital, but I think is the last place it came to prominence, is the social worker and all that goes with this huge area. And I think it's inevitable, I think you'll agree, that most every hospital eventually will make full use of social workers. This has been very slow in coming, but it is coming. And just to give you one small area, just you wonder what do we need a social worker for, to be close within hospital walls is the simple problem of having this vast Medicare problem, which is, if you're keeping up with it, is increasing the number of patients within all hospital walls tremendously as time passes and it's rapidly building. And here we have this very valuable individual who's skilled and talented can handle many of these very difficult problems, which I won't go into, but the point is, helps us with all these problems within hospital walls and solve something that might take me as a physician a month to solve. They can solve it in 2 days. They're trained to do this and they do a very good job. Now, I'm not going to go into what they do. I'll leave it up to him, but most to ask. But they have helped us as physicians very greatly. And I haven't even touched on children in the long list of things these people do, but they have been of invaluable aid to the physician. Now, I was supposed to say one word here with the terminal illness. Only of an individual. individual who is suffering with some terminal illness. I am one of those who feels very strongly we are going to be better if we start out with this fact, so that the family, the pastor, the chaplain, we all speak honestly about this and feel quite strongly, I must say, about this. And I'm willing to argue with anybody that in the long run, the long, tough, critically ill patient, this is going to pay off. And just one small statement on the side, I will emotionally comment that I, as a physician, have never yet had the experience of having difficulty in dealing with a Christian who is in some type of terminal state. I think, I hope Pastor Rob and Cease will concur with me that there is not really that much difficulty. Life Magazine and so on likes to make out of this. It's really a rather simple process. I don't think this is where the problems will lay.
I am the practicing pastor. I've got a few people. I've got a few field workers and a teacher back there who will vouch for the fact that there are some of my parishioners who I'm convinced that I'm still practicing. So I think that's a fair introduction. I think I'd like to start by saying that most of the people that these other men deal with will come to them with a specific need or have needs referred to them. A pastor gets to see a lot of needs, but generally speaking, if people don't come to him, he has to become skilled in identifying these needs and helping the people in their specific need and sometimes referring them then. I would say, in addition to that, while a pastor has to seek out needs and identify them, in my ministry at least, in increasing fashion, people are also coming for counseling. If I read it correctly, more so than ever before, I suppose about 80% of it has to do with family problems, marital counseling, and a great deal of time is spent in this area. As far as my partnership with others, I suppose I can best give you a picture by saying what I did today. And I guess as I went down it, as I was thinking about this before the discussion tonight, almost in every case, I had to be in partnership with someone else. Let me tell you what my day was like today. After my confirmation class, I went to the local public school administration office, where the people in charge of this particular area explained to us the program in sex education that the Ferguson-Florissant School District had instituted. They were very much concerned, the public school-wise and the educators there, that the clergymen know what the score is here and what's happening in the schools. And we talked to some extent how we could help each other in this very vital area. And I think there was a fine partnership involved. They need us because this is an emotional area where parents are concerned also. And we certainly need them because the job is not getting done well. And I think in terms of preventive medicine, if you want to call it that, this is part of the healing partnership. A lot of people who haven't had proper training end up in offices of these men over here. After I got back from there, I had an appointment with very distraught wife who, as I saw the thing, was virtually being destroyed as a person by her husband. What should she do? She all. This one was very distraught. What should she do? I talked with her for about an hour, and I think I was able to help her to get some insight into her problem, only because I have been helped by men along the way who helped me get insight into these things through lectures, through in-service training, through institutes of one kind or another. And I thank God all the time for these insights that I have received, which help people. After that, after lunch, then I went to a nursing home and visited one of our patients there, one of our members. And there was a partnership, an ongoing thing involved here. People with aged, sometimes chronic illnesses, need help in finding what to do with these people. Not only where to place them, but should they be placed? They want to know, is this the right thing to do? Am I really doing right by my father or mother by placing them there? And this is a very needful thing for us to be in on the problem with them. And then, of course, to go to the nursing home to meet with these people, to have devotions with them, to just visit with them and let them know that we haven't forgotten them, to give them communion, and to realize that this is part of their health. Then I went to visit a shut-in at his home near the church. He has terminal cancer. I agree that we should talk to people about this. I got to be honest that I have difficulty in doing it. I wouldn't be honest if I didn't say that. And most of the time, the families are against it. And I can't say that I've really done what I wanted to all the time. But I agree with the principle that as Christian people, we should help people to face this fact, to commit themselves totally to their Father in heaven, and look forward to their heavenly home. In any case, I visited him, and I think in many cases like this, our job is to help people to accept their limitations and to realize that although they cannot have total physical health, they still can be healthy in the total sense of the word. Then I took advantage of the fact that I had to come out here and went to St. Mary's Hospital to see two patients over there. And here I am grateful for physicians who recognize that my ministry to the patients is every bit as important as the actual medical care, because part of their health has to do with their soul, a big part of it. Just as I think doctors are grateful when pastors, on the other hand, recognize that their ministry is just as spiritual as ours is. You can't divide these two, and I think we're coming to realize that in increasing fashion. That's about it as far as partnerships were concerned today. I have, within the past week, dealt with other cases. We, every once in a while, get cases where we recognize a severe mental disorder and have to refer them to psychiatrists. And I think that there are two dangers here. One is, now, generally speaking, pastors don't have any difficulty in suggesting psychiatric treatment. There isn't so much of a stigma attached to it anymore. There is a danger, I think, of overuse, that is, dumping everything into their lap. Whenever I have a problem that I feel inadequate to handle, telling the people, why don't you go to see a psychiatrist? This loads them up. I guess they must be real unhappy when the people send so many to them. And I've got patients who come back and say, the psychiatrist gave me 10 minutes and sent me on my way, and I don't think they're dealing adequately with them, but it's our fault many times, probably for overloading them. Not too long ago, I had a case of premarital pregnancy. boy, when you come up against things like this, you're tremendously grateful for Family and Children's Services, who know resources that you don't know. No pastor can handle all these things and isn't expected to, but every pastor, I think, should be expected to know where to find the help that he needs. In my own pastor, in his own personal life, not only in his pastoral capacity, but his own personal life, leads the partnership that many of these agencies represent. I make use of it. The Washington University Child Guidance Clinic, we make 2 trips a week there. But we, my wife and I, are personally involved, also with a social worker, and because of their help, I think I have become a better pastor and a better person, and I am grateful in my ministry for the help that I received there. I think that, in summary and in conclusion, I would say, often these referral agencies send a problem right back to me and force me to do a better job. And I think that that's necessary at times. As Vern said, we'll refer somebody to Family and Children's Services, and they'll refer them right back to us and say, you're not doing your job. They won't say it in so many words, but they will imply that, and I need that occasionally, just as we all do. They will sometimes train me through institutes and lectures to do a better job as a pastor, and then they will extend my ministry by taking referrals and doing things that I cannot do.
Doctor who brings with him a sense of therapy in its total, and
certainly, as we look over the ministry of Christ, we see how very nicely those two thrusts were put together. The common procedure in the Gospel, as you recall, is to present the healing story first, and then to announce to the audience, to the readers, that this activity, this healing activity, was a sign of the presence of the kingdom of God. And the gospel thrust is that the man who is fully healed is the man who experiences both of these messages, both the message of healing and the announcement that this is God's healing, this is God's saving activity in its total sense. I think the story of the 10 lepers is a very interesting one from that point of view. That he, as Jesus announces to the one who returns, you know, you have been made whole, you have been made well. Not that the others weren't cured from their leprosy, but it was this one who saw that this was God's hand. Jesus then pronounces the character, says that he has gotten the real message that's in God. But these then are characteristic for us in the Christian ministry, even today, as we carry out the ministry of Christ. Now, my function here is to talk about how these apply to the ministry of the institutional chaplain. Supposed to be going. I think there's some very, very clear pictures of these two thrusts as the institutional chaplain carries out his function of ministry. We talked first about the chaplain and therapy, and then secondly about the character. And sometimes when a hospital chaplain becomes what I, for lack of a better term, would call the primary therapist. Suppose this happens more often, more noticeably in a mental hospital than it might happen in a general hospital. But I'll talk about how it happens in a general hospital too, just out of my limited experience with that, because most of my ministry has been in a mental hospital, and my friends tell me that I'm where I belong. Handedly, there are some patients within our hospital to which I am assigned as the therapist designate. Every patient who's in therapy has somebody who's called his therapist, if that makes any sense to you at all. And there are some patients to which I am assigned as the therapist. My team recognizes this fact, that I'm the person who sees this patient intensively and regularly and have kind of a primary say about everything else that goes on with these particular individuals. So in that sense, I'm very heavily exercising my ministry of healing. The same thing happens, however, with the chaplain in the medical setting. I recall vividly, because it was a very vivid illustration, the girl that I was called to see who had just delivered an illegitimate child, a child out of wedlock, supposedly better term than I'm sorry. What had happened to this girl was that she had been put on the critical list in the hospital after her delivery because she had gone into what looked like a state of shock. I don't really know what happened medically. Wasn't too concerned about that, except that she was on the critical list and things looked pretty bad. Well, my function in that particular instance was to come to this girl and the first thing I did was listen to a long tale of guilt that this girl over
message was getting to him. He could sense the healing power of that message for this individual. The day after, I checked again to see how she was, and the nurse told me that overnight she had rallied to such an extent that the following morning she was taken off the critical list again. Now, that's not the usual course of events, and I don't want to mislead you to say that it is, but it certainly does happen. I think you can see the healing power of that kind of a ministry. Secondarily, the chaplain stands as a supporting therapist to the primary therapist, the medical doctor, the psychiatrist, so forth. And I think this has been said very well by the two medical people, and I don't need to reiterate that. Let me talk a little bit about the chaplain and the message of proclamation, and then sit down. The other function of the chaplain in the institution is to say is unique in his function, although I suppose it shouldn't be. If it becomes solely his function, then he hasn't done his job well. But that function is to announce the good news that the therapy that takes place is a sign of the activity of God. The other is to point beyond the primary therapist, in the sense that I was using it before, to the ultimate therapist, namely God as the healer of all. And to say to both doctor and patient that together we need to recognize the ultimate reality of this situation, namely that the doctor doesn't heal, the medicine doesn't heal, but God ultimately heals. Or God doesn't heal in some cases. And to then point hopefully beyond to the healing which is beyond healing, namely to forgiveness, to ultimate realities, eternal life in its vital sense. Now, just for one moment, let me just take up the question, why, if this is the function of ministry, and I'm proposing that it is, why a specialty of a hospital chaplain? What does a hospital chaplain do that the parish pastor doesn't do? Dr. Mortensen pointed very nicely to the fact that probably if there's any conflict, it might be between the hospital chaplain and the parish pastor. I don't think there's a conflict. I think they do very much the same thing. I think the fact of a hospital chaplain is simply a practical matter which has nothing to do with the basis for ministry. Because our basis for ministry is the same. But it's possible for me, in a hospital setting, on a full-time basis, to do some things and say some things which the parish pastor, from his context, isn't able to do. For instance, to say to a nurse or to an attendant, look, what you're doing here is a part of your Christian commitment. This isn't just a job. When you deal with these patients, this is a part of your Christian vocation. To say to a doctor, as I had occasion to do, the doctor was talking about a new program that he was setting up, and he made the comment, sometimes I have a feeling that there's a hand that's been guiding this whole thing that's above anything that I've done. Which was just an offhand kind of comment, but we got to talking about all of this and got into a very meaningful dialogue about his concept of life and purpose and so forth. That's the kind of opportunity ministry, which I had in full-time ministry within the hospital, that the parish pastor isn't able to get to as easily. To be available as I am to the patient, whereas parish pastor is not able to, is another advantage of the full-time specialty of the hospital chaplain. So I think these are practical realities that are present, factors to which the parish pastor can turn, but I don't think that there's any difference between my ministry.
Then I think we'll have the panel, rubbing the chairs down, the panel sit here and inform us.